This week on The Droids, we're headed to Narkeena 5, a planet we've never seen before, a prison we've never seen before, new worlds, new experiences, new Star Wars. All that and more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike. And Chris, 199 episodes of this podcast. What happens when we get to 200? Is that kind of like a thing it's like the other side of death? We don't really know what is out there.
Yeah, exactly. We're going into the West, as they would say, to borrow a metaphor from Lord of the Rings. Yeah, it's uncharted water for us. We're getting there, though. It's impressive.
Do we become one with the Force? I feel like that's about the time.
I honestly think a Force ghost probably joins us on the pod. That might be what happens.
Which one? Which one are we?
I don't know. I'm hoping for a Qui-Gon.
Yeah. Based on
just to reprise his performance in Obi-Wan.
I'm hoping that he's reprising it, but then also having a little bit more to do than just a cameo. So maybe we get him for the entire episode, right?
He's more like a camel-o because he's riding that space camel. Yikes.
Well, I am so thrilled that we've been here for nearly 200 episodes. I do think, there's a lot in the world today about how you show your fandom and how you represent that in collectibles. You know, the digital world is all about how you do that in like NFTs now. I think that if you've done 200 episodes, you get like a special badge. Like you should get some sort of Star Wars Lucasfilm badge, maybe a tour.
At the very least, you should be invited to a celebration on the podcast stage.
Yeah, on the podcast stage. I don't think it's just now. Yeah, not an invite, an actual invite to do a podcast.
Do folks know they're listening to a Star Wars Celebration rejected class podcast?
It is on our Twitter profile.
Yeah, exactly.
They should know it.
Yeah, I don't know if that hurts or helps us. It's hard to know. Depending on the audience. Mike, last episode, we put out a little call for some reviews, and I'm very pleased to announce we're starting to get some reviews, and
it's great. Really nice to see a couple of them, and we didn't put an official time limit on this.
No.
I think what we want to say is that we're going to go through the end of Andor. So we will choose one random review through the next few weeks as Andor ends, I believe in 3 weeks. And so when that's over, we'll choose one random review, and we got two. And we are not saying you have to give us a 5-star review to enter in for the chance to win. And Chris, we wouldn't mind at all. I said that the R2-D2 was about $100+ value. It's like $240. So this is a pretty valuable piece of Lego merchandise.
As we are speaking, it's going up in value. Like at this moment, depending on when you listen. If you're listening to this in like, let's say 2050. The thing's got to be worth $10,000 now, or 10,000 credits, or whatever we're using.
So they may not have figured out time travel, but they definitely figured out how to send emails back in time.
Yes,
and so good luck to you in the 2050. My grown sons now in 2050 are probably going to try to win this.
They're going to end up winning this thing. Yeah, that is true. If you did say there's no time limit, so we'll put that to the test. we'll do it for the length of Andor. So let's hope Andor doesn't have a hiatus between the last 4 episodes. But keep them coming.
That'd be bad. Yeah, that would
like, rate, review us on Apple iTunes or any of them really, but probably Apple Podcast, Apple iTunes.
iTunes doesn't exist anymore, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Yikes. Wow. See, I'm back in time. At DroidsPod on Twitter, at DroidsPod on Instagram. Let us know what you're thinking. Email us, droidspod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear some people's thoughts on Andor. And that you know what? We're pretty bad at checking that email, so they may have.
we should probably check the email.
We should probably check that. Yeah.
To be fair, though, Mario Piper and Joey George Lucas, those are the two entries so far. And again, they've got a great chance to win that R2-D2. We appreciate both of you giving us some nice reviews on the Apple podcast, the non-iTunes. And feel free to do that yourself and get a chance to go after that R2-D2 Lego. We're going to ship it to you at no cost to you. So we'll let everybody know in the next few weeks who the winner is.
It's a good deal.
Well, Chris, Andor episode 8. Yeah, Narkeena 5.
Speaking of good deals. Yeah.
Speaking of good deals. Speaking of good everything. Everything wow. across the board is good.
Wow.
I did not realize this was the longest episode so far.
Interesting.
Which is, I think it's very interesting from a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
But like, we have eaten up so much story. We've had so much wonderful things. And yet, here we are, 8 episodes in. They're not like just coasting to the end, like, well, throw a 27-minuter out there. Maybe 32.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's usually the sell, right? They give you they front load this, that kind of mission.
Yeah. None of that here. We just keep on getting deeper. We keep getting more and more intricate in the world that's being built. And the world of Star Wars has been built time and time and time again. And yet, they've built another world in this. And I already heard this on another podcast, but I can't help but agree with it. They could spend an entire series within this new world of this prison on Narkeena 5 rather than just one episode or 2 episodes as we're about to see. And it would have been a fulfilling, interesting series in itself.
It was so compelling to watch that. Again, this is what makes it fun and interesting is that you're seeing a world, you're seeing the details of how this world operates, and it's all new to us. And you're absolutely right. I wouldn't doubt if we get a comic book series or something based on this prison system.
Oh, I agree with you.
Like, I feel like there's going to be some other universe stuff that we're going to see from this because it's just too cool. I mean, talk about releasing like a Halloween episode. This was like one of the spookiest, most suspenseful, like they just had like a little time bomb. Yeah. Like, is the floor going to go off? What's going to happen here? Yeah. Just the thumping bass of the episode. It was really incredible. At one point, though, I did think, am I watching Andor 11:38?
You're right. And you know what? I think it was that character who then kills himself towards the end of the episode. He had the fully shaved head, and seeing THX-1138.
Yes, yeah. very the vibes of just how they were dressed and just kind of like the prodders and the floor and the way that prison works. So it was definitely, I think, probably a little bit of influence there as an homage that kind of snuck it in.
Chris, that floor and the idea of the floor and then the sound effects and the motion, they must have done a little bit of a freeze frame, some special effect, but watching the bodies of the prisoners visceral reactions I've had to this series of Andor. You know, we talked about it when Skeen was shot. We talked about it, you know, just when they even got off of Aldani, and even like when Dedra won the conversation against Blevin. There's been moments that I've just felt it, and probably no more so than when they were actually shocked for the first time.
Oh, you're telling me,
Like I felt it deep in my stomach and discomfort, and then that carried more tension going forward as it then became Diego Luna's face, basically watching his face continue to suss out what his new life is in this prison.
Absolutely. It was unexpected because, like, the shoe detail, I was like, all right, well, they can't take their stuff. Yeah. And I was kind of like, all right, well, that's an interesting, like, they're prisoners, they're taking their shoes. And then when they're like, we don't use weapons here, I was kind of like, what exactly is going on here in this kind of, like, internment camp to force these people to labor? And then when they switched on the floor thing, I was like, oh my gosh. It's like once they put all the details together, it's like they're wearing the special Super Mario Brothers movie boots. And then you realize, wow, like this is so cool sci-fi. Everything, the details are thought out. Everything is motivated and makes sense mechanically on that level as well. So it makes it that much more like rich and full. But it's certainly traumatizing to watch.
Chris,
and it's just a constant threat in every scene. What if it goes wrong? What if somebody bumps the button? What? There's too many problems.
What if you just take the wrong step as you're getting into your cot and then fall out?
Exactly. Yeah. You trip. Yeah. You slip.
I loved all those details. And I love, they set up enough tension and logical concern about how in the possible world can they get out of this? How does he escape? How do any of them escape through this? Because this has been set up to be a prison that seems to be basically impenetrable. How can they do this? We're going to find out likely in the next episode, but I'm really just floored by what has been the construction of the world of the prison on Narkeena 5 that now we get to watch how they come together and how they eventually escape. I mean, we see him move, what, 30 shifts through? So that's technically like 30 days or maybe even less because it's 12-hour shifts.
Whatever that. We don't know how much planet rotates around the sun also.
Yeah, we don't really know the breaks that they get.
The overarching concept, too, that he's there, not because of the crimes of the heist. Yep. He's there because he was just in the wrong circumstance.
Yep.
At the wrong time under a dictatorship. And now he has a 6-year sentence. And then for him to go in and the other inmates be like, oh, like the rebels, they're doing good work, right? And him to not acknowledge that and just like crush everyone's spirits.
Oh, I know.
It's like, it just makes the whole thing that much more depressing and just like anguishing. It's so hard to watch.
Well, you just think about like the way that, and obviously neither one of us have been in prison, but the way you're detached from the world and to think that your problems matter to the outside world because your entire world is that and what they've been dealing with and how, oh, they changed a policy and doubled our time or changed how much time we're here. That's got to mean something to other people, especially, you know, for those who are there who don't think that they've done anything wrong. And maybe most of them haven't done anything wrong because we've seen what the tyrannical empire is doing and how they're using the labor force of everyone in the prison to keep them going. We don't know what they're building, but they're likely building something either for the Death Star or another piece of empire equipment. And they need these bodies. They need people to be there to build this stuff. And
those weird star-shaped things.
They're not making a choice based on anything that is about their crimes. They're just using them right away. Yeah. And we get a reintroduction to Melshi, who is from Rogue One. And his first real conversation with Cassian is, do not look at the days. Don't look at your shifts. None of that matters. Right. You're here until they're done with you. Which is just absolutely demoralizing.
And Andy Serkis, he's not having that conversation. Andy Serkis, friend of the podcast, Sean, legendary flower shop runner. He pointed out
flower shop owner.
In a text conversation, he said Andy Serkis, we found another Warwick Davis, but one of the few characters to play multiple characters in the Star Wars universe.
Ooh. Well, yeah, and Mark Hamill. Hamill has played multiple characters as well.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. Wow. There you go.
But so you're right. I was excited to see him come back, and I assume no one is going to have any theories about how here's how Snoke began. He started on Narkeena 5 and then transferred. He somehow grew an extra 5 feet, got cut in his head, and lost all his hair. You know, maybe that's just what happens when you give yourself over to the dark side.
Who knows? Who knows what the dark side does to you? It's possible. Who knows what they're putting in those food tubes?
In the food tubes. Chris, I can't help but marvel at so much of this show, but we've talked about the production design and we talked about Luke Hull, who's doing it for all of this. They continue to make all of this feel real, and we've talked about the stark contrast between that and the volume, but from the entry point of the ship onto the prison to obviously seeing their bare feet to then entering into the room where they have all the tables where they do their work, the wide shots in those scenes when they're doing their work are kind of incredible. It's like, how did they build all of that? Now, I know it's just a white room, but it's genuinely
impressive looking. I mean, I think they're kind of, the show does a good job of it, sometimes I think shows shouldn't do this, but it almost goes back to the 80s in the sense of how it's shot and how it looks. The idea of what would the future look like from 1980, and that kind of has got lost a little bit in Star Wars, but it looks like they're shooting it at that, and I'm sure I've mentioned this on the pod before, but like that 28mm lens look, that Spielberg Lucas look, and they're being very consistent too, which to me kind of shows from a production and editing standpoint that they have a continuity of vision, and it hasn't been like mulled over a bunch to throw in inserts and things like that. They're very confident in their filmmaking from that respect. That's like, we have the slew of shots and this is what we want to look like. We're not going to try to take the pieces and make something else up out of it, which you would see that if you have lots of cutaways and close-ups and things within the frame. So the look of the show is incredible, and it's been consistent the whole way through.
You're absolutely right. And I just cannot help but sit in awe of it and want to continue to live in this world as much as this is a painful world to witness. But I want to see more of these sets. I want to see more. Every time I think that they're like going to just go back, oh, they're on Ferrix again. And I guess if they're on Ferrix and they're just kind of reusing a set, it's like, well, no, we're still seeing all these new parts of each planet, all these new parts of the world. We've talked about how they're using it. And I think Ryan has mentioned before, it's when you use the volume when you need green screen. Well, they're using green screen here because they're not on the volume, but they're using it sparingly. And because they're using it so sparingly, it feels, again, much more tactical, or tactile. Like, I actually can feel the textures and everything they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they, I mean, yeah, they do such a good job of establishing like where we're at, and then just filling in those details, as opposed to, I feel like a lot of the other Star Wars shows will like give us a glimpse of that, and then it's just like a room with two people talking.
Yeah.
This, they're going for great lengths to make sure that the world actually makes physical sense for what's going on with the characters. And that's, I think it's a difficult task, especially with a TV show, and you have relative limited time scene to scene and budget scene to scene, but I think they're pulling it off. Like, when they're in the hallway scene, we kind of get this idea of how big this place actually is by you seeing hallway to hallway across that kind of inlet, deep cave kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
When they're signing to each other.
Yeah.
Like, you get an idea of, like, this is huge. And just the idea that, like, how they can't even walk on the floor. How can they possibly get out of this? This is like a Breaking Bad type puzzle, which have no clue. They've written themselves into a corner. And they obviously have the solution, but how are they going to get out of it? And it's super exciting to watch.
It's incredible. I mean, maybe they need to bring back Rian Johnson to direct an episode like he did for Breaking Bad, just so they can get him out of it.
This, I could see it.
This episode was directed by Toby Haynes and written by Bo Willem, who did the first few seasons of House of Cards. So, you know, Murderer's Row coming out here of talented writers, directors, you know, We talked a little bit about Stephen Schiff from The Americans. I believe they said that he's maybe not as actively involved in the series, but he wrote a script that the last episode was based on, and so that's why he got the writing credit. So it could have been still a lot of Tony Gilroy writing the last week's episode. But this is just everything that I think we could have ever hoped for when we've been talking about wanting to see a different side of the galaxy. I mean, we've already mentioned how this is maybe where we said all the directions you could take Star Wars when you bring it to Disney, and you can have the ones that are the more pop nature, the pop, like, satisfying popcorn films, and then you can have the popcorn TV series, and then you can have something like this that is much more made for nuance, for subtext, for deep conversations, for illuminating what the rest of the galaxy is dealing with while we don't talk about the Jedi. And they're doing that, and they're doing that exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And Chris, I am starting to feel like, and there's been a lot of times where it's like, how do these prequels recontextualize what you know about Star Wars and what you like about Star Wars and how you watch the originals again? I feel, not that I will just watch Rogue One differently, but I'll watch A New Hope differently, because I will be thinking about the people on Ferrix, whether it's Marva or Bix, if they make it through this series.
Yeah.
I don't know that they will, but if they make it through, I'm just starting to get invested in how the rest of the galaxy must have felt when Luke Skywalker destroyed the Death Star. And I don't think that they're going to do anything to like get to that point. Like, the end of these 24 episodes in season 2, I don't think we're going to catch up and be like, all right, let's see everybody celebrating when, you know, the Death Star was destroyed, because this is meant to lead up directly to Rogue One. But now I care so much about these characters. Even the other person who used to work with Cassian on Ferrix, who was, I can't remember what his name is, who was with Bix. You know, everybody who seems to be just part of these living planets and who they are, I just want to know that they get to celebrate. I want to know that they get out of this oppressive world that they now exist in. And what an incredible thing to do to make me care so much about the characters who we've never gotten the spotlight in the same way that this series has given them.
Absolutely. I think this, when we first started the show, I was kind of thinking this show is almost like a gateway into Star Wars, and yeah. And just kind of taking that theory, applying it to the other kind of gateways, quote unquote, it does recontextualize the whole series. Like, famously, when Han Solo is kind of poking at Obi-Wan on the Millennium Falcon in A New Hope, some people just call it Star Wars, you see basically, like, when you first watch that, you're kind of like, Han Solo is cool, he's a crazy old wizard. And then we get the prequels, right? And we see this battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and it got real, and it was devastating. So it's kind of like, oh, now when he says that line, Obi-Wan's like, you have no idea, man. Like, that's great.
Yeah,
and I do think that this show does that a similar thing, where it's kind of like, also most of this is just at the detriment to Han Solo, where he only cares about the money at first. So it's kind of just taking apart Han Solo.
It's like, wait a second, Han, you haven't seen all these other people in the galaxy who've been dealing with this oppression? Yeah,
exactly. Well, he's a scoundrel smuggler. Yeah. I mean, he's benefiting from the system in the same way. What's his name? Last Jedi. Oh my gosh,
Finn?
I'm terrible with names. Yeah, or not Finn, but
DJ.
DJ, yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Don't join. it is recontextualizing kind of the vision. In a very supportive way. Don't worry, it's not Luke is still powerful, everyone still has everything. It's adding.
Yeah,
to
it's all additive. It's all been
It's giving me more thoughts. It's not changing thoughts that I had. And I think that's the key difference between what's kind of like the idea of retconning versus the idea of like adding to the universe. And it is a fine line for a lot of people. And for me, this is definitely just giving me more thoughts and opening up my brain to all this. It's crazy.
Well, and
it's so unexpected for me. It's like a perfect end of year show.
It is given me such life in my enjoyment of storytelling again. And I really, we've talked about it early on. There's a lot you can do with IP storytelling, but I don't think anyone's doing anything like this. Like, you're not seeing this kind of thing from HBO and Game of Thrones, from Lord of the Rings, and from Marvel, and you haven't seen this from Star Wars before. They're telling a story that is meaningful and connected deeply to our own lives, to the own world that we exist in, and they're doing it with, you know, incredible propulsion in the way that the story is written, while also having deep meaning to everything that's happening. And everything matters. Nothing is wasted. Yeah. It's incredible.
I mean, they're even like, even if this was written, let's say 2018, 2019, like, they're still nailing kind of details and issues that we're going through now. Yeah. And and Star Wars comes from a place where they were also having very similar issues, paralleling what we know today. I mean, in this episode specifically, they got to stop having these dinners.
At one point, she has to keep having the dinners.
I know she does, but it's just like, at one point they're going to get caught because they just talk so freely.
If I could
give a critique, maybe don't have these conversations in a big room full of people.
Chris, I'm sorry, but when you've had two squids in your drink, you just don't, you're not as careful as you would be otherwise.
I like that it looked disgusting. Finally in Star Wars, someone said, that's gross. It doesn't happen. We see all these things like, oh, it's just how they drink those things. Nope. They're like, nope, it's pretty nasty.
Well, and what about just like, again, these little touches? And I can't remember what the name of the planet is. And Mon Mothma, and I'm sure historians in Star Wars are like, oh, you should have known Mon Mothma's home planet for years. But they mention it here. It's not just simply that they hold to a tradition from their planet that is disgusting, that they just do because they do it. But they also hold to young marriages that are not maybe appropriate and not at the point where it would have been, she would have been mature enough. Now, I think they said that they both were young, so it wasn't like she was marrying a 30-year-old while she was 15.
Right.
But
right, but it, yeah, it does point out kind of just this system across the, there's different systems in the galaxy and forms of oppression that kind of are, that's a quality of this Star Wars universe, right? Yeah. There's different forms and it comes in different ways. Right now, the biggest bad is the Empire, but then maybe, yeah, maybe this young marriage was not something she wanted. It was like, you know what I mean? It could be, it's telling of her character to say like, yes, I was a victim of injustice throughout many different eras and now the Empire is here. So that's why she's more motivated to stop it.
Well, and I think she's focused less on her own self and her own injustice, and no matter how egregious that is, and she's focused on what she can do with the position that she has, even if that position is based on an injustice, because while she might have been married young, she also had probably a lot of privilege, and rather than just walking away from the privilege to focus on her own self, she's using it and using it under a guise to be able to find a way to help raise money for the causes that she matters to her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it's this cool from this perspective too, that we're getting three different views of what basically a rebel army can be. You have, you've got the guy that's kind of like the fixer, right? You have Mon Mothma, who's using her senatorial power and her influence and her privilege to start to move the needle. And then in this episode, we also get to see, introduce Saul.
Yep.
Saul Guerrera. Yep. And I say Saul? Saul.
Sal. He's a Sal. Big Sal.
Yeah, Big Sal.
They turned into the Sopranos on us.
Yes, exactly. Big Sal. You get to see him, which is also another angle of the rebellion. And going between the kind of different things, you see like, oh, they're not all aligned yet either.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see the foot soldiers, again, character name slipping me. I should do more research. the two women that had the conversation.
Yeah, Vel and Cinta.
Yes. And so you start to learn some details about her. So like you're getting all angles that like, no, this rebel front isn't just one unified body with the same opinion. Like these are people coming from all different perspectives that are trying to fight this evil in the best way they know how.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And that's
right.
Something we have not got from Star Wars. Like, we never had that explanation.
I totally agree with you, Chris. And it's a really fascinating thing. And it's what Luthen is up against, right? He's trying to find a way. And that's kind of the point of his scene where he goes to see Saw Gerrera, is he's trying to make
it... Seesaw.
Yeah, Seesaw. He's trying to make... it work where if they can come together and essentially his plan, it's so interesting because I think back to that conversation between him and Mon Mothma in episode 7, where she's not expecting this kind of violence and the things that are going to come down. And she says, people will suffer. And he's like, that's the point. You know, that's the whole point, is to bring down the oppression even more so from the Empire. So it forces people to act. And while that in theory is like, well, yeah, that makes sense. So many people are going to suffer and deal with pain and loss because of it in the meantime, including all of those who are on Ferrix, those who are in Narkeena 5, those in the prison, because that sentence, their sentences being doubled is about, because of Aldani.
Well, and it also, I mean, ultimately, it's going to lead to the creation of the Death Star.
Well,
to keep these planets in line.
Exactly, you're right. Which, again... if you think about it from the long game and the way that Luthen is intending to think about it, at least from what we've seen, that's what he wants. A planet killer, bring in a planet killer that makes forces people. And look at our own world right now. Like we are in the United States where our democracy is probably in jeopardy in the next few years. And what is going to force us all to act? What actually gets us all to be doing more than simply saying, well, we voted for the right guy. It's too bad that woman they lost. You know, that's not enough. And what a statement to sit here and say we're steps away from losing a lot of our rights. And even they talked about how they even said, you know, the Empire has been choking us so slowly we don't even notice anymore. You know, there's a world that we do that as well in our own reality.
Yeah. Well then, I mean, it's interesting they keep going back to that that idea, that imagery of the tightening of the grip, because it's kind of, it's always that reference to the line in A New Hope, like the more you tighten your grip, it will slip through your fingers. Yeah. And I keep thinking of that, and it's so cool to kind of decorate that with what this show is doing, is to say, like, that is what they're doing. They're pushing them to tighten their grip so much that, like, they're not going to be able to hold it all because their fist is going to be full. So it's kind of like, it's very cool to see this in action.
Chris,
you're absolutely right. It is mimicking, it is a show for our time, and it is telling us something about our time. And I really hope, the fact that it's on Disney is fascinating, that they would have this kind of political statement. It is a political statement. It's great, and I hope a lot of people watch it, and I hope it becomes an earworm.
Or a squid in your drink.
Or squid. Hope it becomes a squid in your drink. Tip of the cat to that. Tip of the loath cat to that.
I think, though, that, Chris, this is what great science fiction does, right? It's a mirror to our world. And look, wasn't there a mirror that was even discussed in this by Cinta holding up the mirror to Vel? And what does she say? Yeah. It's like, I'm showing you what you need to see. You know, this is what this series is doing, but you can get away with it. And I'm not maligning any sides of our own political world, but I don't think it's something that is readily apparent to every viewer. Like, they may see the oppression, but they're not going to make the one-to-one connection because they don't want to. They don't want to see and say that our world is like becoming as restrictive as an empire.
And that's kind of the magic that is, I think that's what the magic of Star Wars is, right? Yeah. It was this metaphor for Vietnam masked in this space fantasy opera, Western samurai movie. And people are like, this is great. And, oh, you like those guys? Yeah. Oh, they're great, right? They're the good guys, right? Yeah. Well, guess what?
Guess what?
Yes.
I don't think we can say that any, you know, like, I'm sorry, but if you're part of the MAGA community, you're not exactly on the rebellion side. Let's just be honest.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're being fooled.
I do want to talk about Saw Gerrera a bit more, though. I'm gonna drop a hot take here, Chris.
Please.
Do not like the character of Saw Gerrera. And I know part of it is meant to anger, you know, the rest of the standard rebellion, those who are willing to work together, those who are willing to, I just think, even though I've watched all the Clone Wars, I've seen him in Rogue One.
Yeah.
I just don't think I get the character. And I remember his sister was killed in the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It is never connected for me. Do I love watching Forrest Whitaker and Stellan Skarsgård go back and forth? Absolutely. But I'm just kind of like, I don't like this weird, detached, mentally all over the place Saw Gerrera. It doesn't work for me. I really don't know that I like Saw Gerrera being in anything that I've seen.
Interesting. It just, is it because it throws too much of kind of a wrench into things?
Yeah, I mean, do I want them to figure things out and work together? Yes, but sure. I don't think that's the thing that's bugging me about it. Mostly, I think his Rogue One character makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And, you know, the idea of the whole Bo Gallet. But then, you know, we know that the first half of that movie was, like, redone completely. And they made some edits and some cuts. And he makes a choice where it's like, okay, we're having a regular conversation with Jin. And then he says, are you here to kill me? And I'm like, what is happening here? It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I think he, in a certain time and place, I think he is used to illustrate, like...
Yeah, the more radical version of the rebellion,
like,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like... to use a local metaphor, like, he's like the Antifa.
Yeah.
He's giving the rebels a bad name, right?
Except he exists and Antifa never did.
exactly. But I think that's why he exists on a very kind of like basic level and in as a character. And I think it's kind of cool because I think it shows like the sides of rebellion. He's never been like a, oh man, I can't wait to see him kind of character. Yeah. He's never been an outlier in that sense for me. I'd be excited to see him as I would like Rex or any other character from the Clone Wars mostly.
Oh yeah.
Aside from, you know what I mean? Like, he's fine. It's a good character. It's interesting. And like you said, Forrest Whitaker brings it. So I'm happy to see him.
Yeah.
do something interesting with it, and maybe we'll learn something, Mike. Maybe we'll learn something about him we didn't know.
That would be great. And I want it to seem, I don't mind his opinion. I just want his opinions to have their own logic within his opinion. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy to be angry and disagree with him because he doesn't do what I want him to do, or he doesn't align to the rest of the rebellion. Yeah. But it's like,
but you think he's just too far out.
It's like, it's all scattered.
It's almost like too, it's almost like too cartoonish at points.
Yeah, it was definitely too cartoonish in Rogue One. It's better in Andor, but yeah.
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 Yeah, and you know what, maybe, and again, I think different audiences too for like Clone Wars and Rogue One and now this. And I think maybe that's the cuz I feel like in this one he was pretty understated and kind of like very confident in his opinions at this point in time. So we know now that he's like, he's established already. So we're not really getting like an origin. Yep. And we got that in kind of Clone Wars. But I think I'd be interested to see if there's an inciting incident that brings him from this to the one, to the Saw we see in Rogue One.
Yeah, I agree.
Like if there's something that happens in between that like, really flips that switch where he's finding weird earworms.
Yeah, get those earworms out of there. I agree with you. I would like to see that as well. I honestly wonder what I'm forgetting about Clone Wars that also, because I, you know, his sister dying is one thing, but like I don't remember enough of a story arc of how he dealt with the death of his sister.
Right, and I think it was kind of a similar thing where it was like he was kind of rooting, inciting for violence in a way that no one else wanted to.
Yeah.
As delicately as a children's cartoon could.
Well, there was a lot of death and a lot of horrific things that happened in that cartoon. But you know,
I hope. I mean, if we're introducing Saw, I hope we see what's his name, the one clone who like had the family settlement.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yep.
That would be a cool thing to see, kind of like start out.
Yep. Before we move on from talking about the prison real quick on Narkeena 5, I do think we need to talk about Dedra and we need to talk about Cyril. But I want to talk about just the introduction on the prison. When they first arrive, we talked about the moment of them getting shocked. But I also want to just call out the officers of the Empire, the one who does the introduction. I don't remember the sound he makes or what he says right away when they first arrive. But there is like a pitch and a tone in what he does with it where I was just like, who is this guy? And he is awesome. So villainous and amazing.
These are A-plus villains. They have cast
so good.
Props to the casting department. You have casted the best Star Wars villains since I saw the original movie. Like they are through and through villainous.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Do you think that they were young kids when Star Wars came out and they're like, oh, I can't wait to be Luke Skywalker, and now they're adults and they're like, well, you're an Empire officer.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, you're in the movie. But I mean, how much fun would that be though? Just to be
Chris, like, if there was one goal for our 200 episodes, again, let's talk about what comes from a fandom. You do 200 episodes, I think you get a guest spot. I think you get to be an extra, right?
Yeah. Why aren't they, I mean, they should pay us more than they already are to do this.
We're shilling for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the other thing I wanted to say about the prison was you mentioned the hallways, Chris, and the sign language between the inmates of the prison who don't see each other because they're not on the same level. They may hear about what's going on with some of them, the other ones who are more efficient in their work. But I liked them going back and forth. And as you mentioned, showing all the different tunnels of all the people who were in the hallways, because Chris, are we on our way to another great hallway scene in Star Wars?
First off, the idea of the burner floor hallway, it's already put itself up there in the ranks of great hallways.
Yeah.
the fact that Andor literally waited to the last 2 seconds to get off that floor.
Oh, I know.
which, I don't know if that was an internal choice, but it was sure frustrating to watch. That was... I was not happy. I was like, please just get off this floor. Like that's all I could think the whole time. I mean, there's gotta be a way to get him out. Yeah. And maybe that's gonna be a gunfight in a hallway. And I won't be sad to see it.
Well, you
I do
they
like
have
the
to steal
idea,
some
though.
Boots somehow.
Yes, exactly. I was thinking and maybe it doesn't work like this. Can't they like take their clothes and kind of like just put it on their foot? But that's
That's a pretty good question. I like that.
I know. That scene in particular also shows this kind of idea of they're trying to talk to each other. Like, again, they're backed into a corner. I have no idea how one would get out of this situation, but then all of a sudden you see a little poke in the seams, a little cut in the seams of, ooh, they're communicating across hallways.
Yep.
This is for something greater, which is a very nice little detail.
Well, and we talked about how they could be stuck here and they could be, you know, you could do 8 episodes. You could do a series about being in this prison. I don't, you know, I'm not going to feel bad and feel like it's bad storytelling to have him escape within 2 episodes, but it also, it sort of just makes you feel like, oh, we could experience so much in this world, but that's not the necessity of the story we're telling right now, which I wonder when this show was 5 seasons, was there a 8 episode arc in the prison? Was there like an 8 episode season just in Narcina 5?
I mean, it could literally be a show.
Yeah.
Like, it could be like Prison Break Star Wars. Well, you know what I mean? Like,
well, we're about to get Prison Break episode Star Wars is clearly what's going to happen. But it's Squid Games. In a way, it feels a lot like Squid Games.
Mm-hmm.
And
which I have not seen. But well, I know.
And this show has been, they've been making it for 3 years. I wonder if they were like, oh, come on, really? We're just going to overlap with Squid Game? What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. But again, I think we talked earlier on where it's like, Tony Gilroy, he doesn't care.
Oh, yeah, no, he's doing what's right by the show he's trying to make. Yeah. And again, just building out this world, it's so cool to watch something new, to think about something new, to, you know, dream about what, even though it's terrifying, and it's terrifying... yeah. Again, so watch these inmates deal with this, but like, because you can't help it.
It's like Papillon or Great Escape. It's that idea of a prisoner who's fighting for something, not yet, but we know what they can achieve. So we know he gets out, but how does it happen? It's going to be great. I can't wait. I'm genuinely so excited for these next episodes.
So Chris, we get Cyril, who's been apparently in his job in the fuel tracking company or whatever he's doing, in his massive set of desks. He's been filing report after report about still trying to find Cassian Andor and give information to Dedra. So they finally meet. He gets given the report about what was going on in Ferrix that left out some of the details, and then presses Dedra to be more involved in talking about how, you know, you can't let up when you're trying to root out any of this dissent. And it feels like they're kind of like a match made in heaven as two villains who have the same purpose.
Yeah.
But yet that's not the easy answer for Cyril. It's never that easy. No. I keep on sitting there thinking like, all right, here we go. He's finally going to get himself some Empire fitted tailored jacket. But no.
There's something. Yes. It's almost like Cyril to his core believes in the Empire.
Yeah.
Everyone else is playing it for their own political position.
Well, I think Dedra does. Well, she's playing it for her position, but I think she does believe in the root cause or root reason for
the Empire. Right. But she's taking advantage of her circumstance. And so she's like, I don't want anyone to compete with this. Like, so she's basically like shutting this guy down because it's kind of like a snake pit, right? They're eating their own. We're seeing this between their interactions with everyone in that room where it's like, they want to be on top. They want to be the Emperor's right hand man because they're also vowing for power. And so it's kind of fun to see this guy who's like, I am your guy. I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden she's like, no, like slow your roll because this will just be a problem for me.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I'm so excited about watching this continue to play out. And I just really, is Cyril just going to be keep on getting kicked? I mean, I don't want him to become the villain of power, but he just keeps on getting dumped on.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. He is the, Ice Age, squirrel chasing the nut. And it's kind of funny to see him Mr. Magoo his way around, or Mr. Bean his way around this place where it's like, he knows he has the answer and he probably could do it, but he's not going to get the chance because he just wants it too bad. And, I mean, but you're right though. it's going to hit a point where it's going to drive him to extremism because he's not being heard. And yeah, it's going to make him crazier and crazier until something really bad happens.
It's going to be interesting.
And I often wonder if there's going to be a scene with like him and his mother being kind of like almost like if his mom gets in trouble with the Empire or something. You know what I mean? Like what's going to happen there?
Because I'm more so thinking that he's going to lose it and kill her and turn this into a Bates Motel situation in Psycho.
Oh, like sure. I could see that. Yeah. And I could see that. So it'll be like eating cereal every day. Yeah.
How did you work your way up and how did you get all this money? Well, you know, my mom gave it to me.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a hologram of her. Yeah.
But it's pretty wild. It's interesting to watch because I don't know if you felt this way, Chris, but like, we don't like the Empire. We don't like what's going on. But Dedra, you're almost on her side through a lot of what she's been doing throughout this. And you know, they're closing in on Luthen, and we don't know what happens to Luthen. Mm-hmm. He's a character we have no idea what his end story is. And they now have an idea that he exists. They're calling him Access. She needs to do everything she can to find him and find any information she can. So she begins to torture characters that we care about. And it's like, oh yeah. She is a villain, and I'm now more terrified of how easily I rooted for her and how easily I could see her point of view while now she's like going to go and do all these evil things.
I know I alluded last episode to say maybe she's a spy or a double agent.
Don't think
but I feel like the fact that she was kind of like, keep that guy in the room so she sees him.
Yeah.
And then when they all entered, she was like yelling at everybody like, what are you doing? Get him out of here. Like that's an evil thing to come up with. Like that's an evil plan. So
And when we see the trailer, she does have a great face for evil Imperial officer, but we kind of got a better sense of like, oh wow, she's smarter than the rest of the group. We just want to see her be efficient and kind of be successful in her role. But when you're in the trappings of the Empire and there's a reasonable person, you can relate to that person. But then when they get out of that and they start to impose their will on the outside world, it's like, oh yeah, wait, that's not right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It kind of lulls you into that false sense.
Yeah. Well,
of acceptance.
Let's hope that Bix is okay. Let's hope that Bix gets out of there. I do think Marva and Bix are certainly in some serious jeopardy being that they're all there. Vel and Cinta are now in the role of observation looking for Andor. Because they're supposed to get Cassian and kill him. They're supposed to kill him because he knows what Luthen looks like.
It's a loose end. Yeah.
And so that's their job. And so we get a little bit of a nice scene between the two of them. And, you know, Vel is just trying to say, don't we deserve a break? Don't we get this time? Right. Can't we have something to ourselves? And you don't. They're making it clear that you can't in a rebellion like this.
And And that's why that's why she was hesitant to do the leap, right?
Yeah.
She was
waiting. Oh, yeah. She was like, great call.
She knew there was no turning back.
Yep.
And I mean, was that Saw's operation? Like, who, right? Yeah. Like, they kept going that back and forth. And I love the line when she basically, it was kind of like, we're many different types of people. And she was like, oh, yeah, like, you could even be some rich person's daughter. Mm-hmm. That's such a telling line for her. Mm-hmm. And then also the fact, I love that her response was, that's cold. like they didn't leave it to chance. It was kind of you just insulted me. You just tried to hurt my feelings. I thought that was really well written there. And also just like an interesting fact of again, it's all different types of people that are in this rebellion and for different reasons and who are her parents? I don't know. I hope we don't have like a parental connection thing.
I'm Star pretty Wars sure loves it. Star I'm pretty Wars sure Snoke it. Is her dad. Let's just be honest.
Yes, exactly. Well, she's Sheev's daughter. she's one of Sheev's kids. Ray's cousin.
So, speaking of all the characters, like we don't even know much of anything about who the character is. We've seen in the shop that Bix goes to find her way back to communicate with Luthen, but the guy Pak, who gets tortured before Bix, we just know he's part of the world there and he's doing what he can to help with Ferrix, you know, push back against this occupation from the Empire. And you know, he's just another casualty within it. I mean, he hasn't died yet, but it's just another tortured person who's gonna. We hope that he's gonna make it through. But the last thing I do want to call out the transition. Vel is on the bus, you know, the speeder or whatever the transport is. And she's looking out in the distance. And then there's that cross dissolve to Cinta. And it felt very Star Wars to me, but it also felt very romantic. Both of them, like Vel is disappointed by not being able to spend the time with her. Cinta is totally doing what her role is and looking out for trying to find Andor. But there's a longing from Vel, and it just felt very nice. There's I like that shot a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're playing with the idea that doing this rebellion is sacrifice, and they have real stakes on the line, and they're sacrificing, they're putting their relationship to the ultimate test here, there's a real feeling of sacrifice happening here with some of the characters.
Chris,
I'd say all of the characters.
I miss having Ryan and Sam on this pod because we need to hear their thoughts on all these episodes. And you know, we're already talking about it. We talked before this episode. We might just go back and watch all of this again and do podcast episodes, deep diving on every episode again, because there's just so much to say.
I love it.
And Chris, every time we do an episode, something about the new episode seems to illuminate something about a previous episode. You already had brought up a couple of those things, which is really just fascinating and fun to experience.
Absolutely.
Again, you know, hang with us for episode 9. We're going to be here for the rest of the series and excited to continue to dive deeper into this. Of course, make sure to leave us a review on iTunes Apple Podcasts to make sure you get your chance.
I did it. Oops.
To get your chance at that R2D2 and, you know, write us an email, droidspod@gmail.com. Chris, I want this to be the new set template. Like, we talked about it. We don't need this to be the way that all Star Wars is, but it's going to be very difficult to watch another series that isn't like this. So if you are enjoying Andor, our call to you and to anyone else, tweet about it, talk about it, watch it over and over again. The more minutes streamed, the more likely it is to get more content like this. And I will stand by. I know that people don't agree with me. I still think Andor is a one for me, one for them situation. I think they put a lot of money into this. And if Andor is not as successful as the things that were shot on the volume, we're just going to get more volume and we're not going to get Andor type things. And that's going to be sad. We need this. Right. And I do think this has a long life after like its episodes are running. Word of mouth is going to continue to be great. But we need Andor to get the attention and the love. So tweet about it. Talk about it. Knock on Kathleen Kennedy's door. Camp out there if you're you and me. You know, when you get your access for doing 200 episodes, make sure you talk everybody's ear off.
Exactly. We'll talk about it on the celebration stage for sure.
Oh, without a doubt, Chris. Chris, what are we doing for 200? Next week is 200. What are we going to do?
I mean, hey, you know what? There might be some special surprises. Don't worry.
Did you get Mark Hamill to join?
I can't say. I can neither confirm nor deny our special guest.
Are you writing on the new Damon Lindelof show? Is that a movie?
I was gonna say yes. It's what I announced. I'm leaving the pod to make to work with Ryan Johnson.
Oh boy! Oh boy! Oh,
Ryan Kutu Johnson. Nobody listeners realize that our Ryan was actually Ryan Johnson.
Yeah, he's been that Ryan Johnson.
That's gonna be the big reveal. Yeah.
We also will talk
and
about
Sam was actually Sam Worthington the whole time too, which is kind of crazy.
And you've been Chris Pine.
And I've been Chris Pine,
I don't, there's no cool mics out there.
And you've been Michael Corleone.
With Big Sal. Oh, Big Sal.
Yeah, with Big Sal,
But Chris, we got to talk about Tales of the Jedi at some point as well. I'm excited about that. I do have hesitancy that, you know, I don't want people to get excited about legacy characters when it's much better to be doing these new characters, but what are you going to do?
Oh, it's going to be fun, No, I'm excited to watch that. I haven't dug into that yet, but we'll do an app about it.
We'll do an app. We'll do three. We'll also finish those last five chapters of Light of Jedi, right? We got to do it.
It's all there.
I am.
Don't forget that.
I have the High Republic sitting on my nightstand. I've had no time to read it, but I can't wait because I love that too. Chris, we are in another just like peak time of Star Wars right now. This is awesome.
Going back to the Godfather, just when you're out, you come crawling right back in, right?
Just when they pull a Book of Boba Fett on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Join us next week for more Andor.
Anidor?
Woke up this morning, got myself a Big Sal. Thanks. I've never watched them.
Got myself some blue milk and
got a blaster.